Good day, everybody. My name is Glenn Hill.
And I'm Jacob Meyer.
Welcome to the Tactical Tennis Podcast. And if you've been tuning in to the last couple of episodes, we've been diving deeper and deeper into service strategy.
Today, we want to talk about how more specifically to integrate your service strategy into the bigger picture of your game.
Yeah, because if you go back to podcasts from a couple months ago, we had talked about figuring out your own tennis philosophy, kind of getting feedback from other players, recording yourself and looking at video and taking some statistics and getting a better understanding of who you are as a player. And if you're not taking these ideas of service strategy and putting that into that bigger picture of who you are as a player, and if your serve isn't helping you play tennis the way that you need to be playing tennis in order to maximize your chances of winning, well, then you're leaving points on the table. You're leaving opportunities on the table.
Yeah, and you said it right there, where your serve needs to be helping you maximize your chances of winning, which sounds obvious in a way, like, oh, yeah, of course, you know, it's supposed to maximize my chances of winning. But if you stop and think about it really closely, that's probably not the language that most players think about their serve. Like, when you step to the line, it may be more of an emotional thing, or like, you know, you're trying to hit the best serve that you can, or you're trying to hit an ace, or you're just trying not to miss, or it can be different things for different people. But that's a different thing than really building the strategy around, you know, a nice, well thought out process and strategy that's coherent together.
Absolutely. So one of the things that I hear players talk about a lot at all levels of the game is this idea of getting free points off the serve. And I've always hated that term, because to me, there's no such thing as a free point. And second of all, if I win the point due to the quality of my serve, that wasn't free. That was me utilizing one of my strengths to win the point, the same way that if I hit a forehand winner down the line, it's not a free point. I had to hit the forehand and hit the winner to get the point. It's not free in any sense of the word. And there's this idea of, look, if I'm employing strategy, then yes, I'm going to hit some aces, or yes, I'm going to get some errors. But a point is a point is a point. And I don't win 2 points for the serve not coming back, and only one if I hit a serve and then a forehand winner. They're all worth the same amount. And so this idea of a free point on the serve has always been something that bothers me.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. To me, free point just doesn't add up in a lot of ways. Like, I still have guys, especially the stronger players, the tour guys or the people with bigger serves, really dig in and say, like, oh, well, I need more free points. I need a free point there. And they have this idea that they need it in some sense to, like, save their energy or something, right? Like, well, I don't want to have to work too hard on other points. And I always think, well, you're putting maximum effort into the serve, but there's got to be better ways to kind of spread out your energy usage throughout a match. So, you know, you think about this, I think, very differently. You don't just step up to the line and think, oh, I'm going to hit aces. Like, if you're planning an ace, I'm going to say it's pretty likely, actually, that you're hitting an ace. How do you think about, like, what's my basic goal for the serve?
Well, so this, my basic goal for the serve is to hit the serve that gives me the greatest chance of winning the point that's in front of me. And to make that decision, again, we're looking at going back for previous points in that same service game, previous service games, and looking at the bigger picture and the trends and the way the points have been played. But the big thing is that I want to be playing tennis in a way that suits my game. I want to be playing tennis in a way that maximizes my strengths and minimizes my weaknesses. And I'm serving to do that. And that might mean serve and volleying on some points. And primarily, I'm going to be serving to set up my forehand, because my forehand is the big driving point of my game these days. And that's what I'm primarily trying to do, is figure out this point that's in front of me, is it the right time to try? Is, you know, have I served well enough the last two or three points and done the right things that if I hit this serve now it's going to be an ace? Or do I need to go for a body serve and set up a forehand and come in? I mean, there's that sense of what's the right play at this moment given what's happened in the past couple points, the past couple games. And so we're always putting that into the bigger picture.
So it sounds like you're really thinking about, you know, I want to serve to set up the rest of my game. How does that look in terms of where your focus is when you're actually, like, when you're at the line? You know, you've got those few seconds, you're bouncing the ball. Like, are you thinking about, you know, like a chess player? Like, I'm thinking eight moves ahead. I'm thinking, you know, what shot's going to come to me eight moves from now? I mean, I don't know that you can even, like, I don't know if that's even possible or realistic.
No, I don't think that's realistic, and it's certainly not where my head's at when I'm stepping up to serve. And, you know, ultimately, I think that the important thing here is this first ball after the serve, because we've talked some recently about patterns in the podcast and this idea of using sequences of shots to essentially maximize your strengths and protect your weaknesses, or to shuffle play off your weakness onto your strength. And the serve and the first ball after the serve are no different, because look, I think that everybody, hopefully you're playing people that are approximately around your level. You know, if you're a 4-0 player and you're playing against a 6-5 player, then look, there's not a whole lot that I can do for you or that Jacob can do for you to help you win that match, because you're just outgunned. Right. But if you're playing people that are appropriate to your level of skill, then this is where you can have massive impact by use of intelligent tactics and strategies. And so when we think about the serve and how all this fits together, you know, the quality of your serve relative to your level is going to change the way these returns tend to come in. Because it doesn't matter at this point whether you're a 3-0 player or a 4-0 player or a 5-0 player or a 6-0 player. You know, if we look at the Pro Tour, Diego Schwartzman has a relatively weak serve for a touring men's professional player. Serena Williams has a killer serve for a touring professional women's player. And what Serena might expect back off her first serve is very different from what Diego Schwartzman's going to expect back off his first serve or his second serve. You know, Serena's expecting to be on offense, and she expects if she hits a big serve down the tee on the deuce court that a certain type of ball is going to come back from the women on the WTA that she's playing against. And Diego Schwartzman's going to expect a different return, just like Nick Kyrgios is going to expect a different return than Diego Schwartzman. And this is the big thing, right? If Diego hits a tee serve on the deuce court against 100 different men's professional players, the average return he gets back is going to be a very different return than if Nick Kyrgios hits the same serve, right? They're going to land in general in different parts of the box. The quality return is going to be different. It's going to have different velocity, different depth, different angle, because the quality of the serve is so different. And it's important to understand, if you're going to build serve plus one patterns, you have to have an idea of what's going to come back when you hit a particular type of serve.
All right, so it sounds like when you, like, if we kind of narrow this down to, like, what am I thinking about when I go up to hit that serve, right? It sounds like you're kind of limiting yourself to thinking, I'm just going to think about my serve plus one. Like, what's this serve going to do? And, you know, what are the possible options on the very next ball that I want to be prepared for?
Yes, I think that would be a fair statement. At the end of the day, what we do want to do is have a plan for all the probable or likely outcomes. So if I hit a big serve up the tee on the deuce court, for me and my serve at the level that I play at, there's really only a couple of types of returns that will tend to come back. And, you know, obviously there's going to occasionally be a return that is outside of that, those normal probabilities, but as a general rule, there's only a couple of returns that are going to come back from that. And, you know, let's say that I hit the serve up the tee, and one of those returns, if I actually get the guy to stretch and he's chipping that return, well, then I'm going to get a floating slice backhand. It's usually going to be center or slightly to the right of center, and I'm hitting a forehand, and I'm going to have a plan for that forehand. And then likewise, if the guy hits over it, usually it's going to be an inside out backhand, and it's going to be coming into my actual forehand corner, and I have a specific plan for that forehand. And depending on which one of those two comes out, I already know what shot I want to try to hit off that next ball. And I want to have that for my wide serve on the deuce court, for my body serve on the deuce court, for my kicker to the body, for my kicker up the tee, and all those same things on the ad court, where if I hit that serve, I know what's probably coming back. And of all the things that are likely to come back, I already know what my response to that specific shot is. And so then I don't have to make a decision at that point. The only time I have to make a decision, a real decision, one that hasn't been made before the match even started, is when somebody hits a return that's unexpected, which does happen and will happen to everybody at every level sometimes. Those are the times when I think we get off pattern and we have to kind of be a little bit more creative.
Okay, so it seems like it's probably a good idea not to get into the off pattern, like really creative stuff that is more difficult to predict. Like before we do that, it seems sensible to say, well, let's be really good about the thing that's probably winning us 90% of our points, right? Like,
yes, exactly.
Let's get our fundamentals really sound.
And this is one of these ideas I think that I just want to touch on very quickly that I know we will reiterate in future podcasts because it is a critical idea. But when you watch any successful, structured top player play, and I specify the structure part because some of the players on the men's and women's tours aren't playing with the level of structure that they should. But for most of the ones that are consistently successful, when they start any point or they're playing any point, the vast majority of the time, they're just playing routine patterns that they've practiced a gajillion times before, that they've executed in matches a gajillion times before. When you see Federer play some magical, you know, curving banana passing shot, or Rafa hit some scrambling backhand, you know, crazy angle ball, or Murray or Djokovic do the same thing, or any of the top players do that, that's the moment of magic where they're making it up as they go along, when they've been forced to create something that's outside of their normal patterns, right? But the rest of the time, they want to go out there and just play the same few points over and over and over again because that's where their bread and butter is. That's their paycheck. Is playing, you know, the wide serve out wide on the deuce court and then the forehand down the line, finish the point. Or some variation of that, depending on, you know, who it is that we're talking about. So, yes, we need to focus on those patterns that are going to make up the majority of the points that we play, or should make up the majority of the points that we play. If you find yourself people always, always having to make shots up on the fly, then that means that your decision tree, that your pattern development isn't where it needs to be yet. If you're constantly running into situations where you don't know what you're supposed to be doing, then you haven't spent some time sitting down and analyzing, you know, what's the best option for you in what are obviously common situations.
Yeah, and in a really simple way, you can think of improving your level by just putting yourself in position to play the patterns that are good for you more and more often.
Absolutely.
Right. So, and that goes for anyone. It doesn't matter if you're a beginner or if you're Roger Federer, who just took back the number one ranking this week without even playing tournaments for a couple of weeks. But you can see how well Roger's playing by measuring, you know, how often he's playing his favorite patterns. Because if he's playing his favorite patterns, I mean, really the question becomes, well, how do you beat the guy? You know,
yeah, like, and Rafa's the same way. Like all the very top guys, the guys that have managed to be dominant, the women that have managed to be dominant, are playing inside their comfort zone because they're doing something that they've rehearsed over and over again. So, Jake, when we talk about this, how do you think someone should go about building their serve plus one strategies and building these like serve plus one patterns of play? Like, where would you start for somebody?
Well, the first thing that I do is try and match up their serving tactics or their overall serving strategy with their identity as a player, right? So they should already have done some work to figure out like their basic identity of a player, how they're going to win points after the serve.
So are you suggesting maybe that if you hit a 140-mile-an-hour serve like Nick Kyrgios, that you shouldn't then go into grind mode like Leighton Hewitt back in the day?
Yeah, and actually, I mean, Kyrgios is an interesting example because sometimes he does do that. And that's one of the things that we look at with his game where we see this tremendous potential on the one hand. One way to hash that is to think about, I mean, this is a guy who might play half of his points across matches for the year just like off the cuff without good patterns. And you think, man, like what? How good would this guy be if he went from playing 50% patterns to 80% patterns? Like,
right. He's doing a lot of creative play on the fly.
He's doing a lot of creative stuff on the fly, which isn't necessarily bad, but it's just not as – he's not going to execute it as sharply as his really bread and butter kind of stuff. So, yeah, you know, if you're a guy that is like a Diego Schwartzman, like you shouldn't necessarily be trying to just win free points off the serve. We very much start with like, okay, what's your – I look at the serve plus one and focus on the plus one part of that for a moment. And really ask players, like, if you could have anything to start the point after the serve. Like, forget about the serve for a moment. But if you can start the point any way you want, where you feel like, I'm going to be in control of the point, what is it that you want to be doing? So you can imagine if a player says, well, I want to hit a volley. Well, then the next question is, well, are you a serving volleyer? You know, and sure. A lot of times people would be like, no, I'm not a serving volleyer. It's like, but you want to hit volleys, okay? You know, now we have something to talk about. Like for you, you mentioned you want to get a forehand. You probably want to get a mid-court forehand. If you have a mid-court forehand and your opponent is also somewhere in the mid-court, or if they're pinned over to one side, I've seen it. Like, they're in big trouble. You have good disguise. There's no way for them to know which side of the court you're hitting to. They have to defend both corners, and it's essentially an impossible task. So we're trying to establish what's that sort of preferred thing. And then we start building one pattern at a time from that. So personally, I like people to get really good at one pattern before they try and sit down and develop 20 patterns. I want them to really understand the sort of some depth to what they're trying to do. How much sense does that make?
No, that makes sense, and it's a little differently from how I think about it, because there's a way in which, you know, I start with what does the return typically look like for your serve. So if you hit the wide serve on the deuce court, and you play against five different people and you hit that serve, let's say, you know, 10 times against each of them, what do the aggregate returns look like? Is everybody returning that cross court? Are they all returning it down the line? Is everybody hitting up the middle? Where does play 10 to go? And then from there, we would say, well, look, if the balls are all coming cross court and you're a right-hander and you're getting a forehand now for your first ball and you've taken them, you know, moderately wide, and yeah, because, I mean, again, it's all about your level of play, right? So, I mean, if you're Roger Federer, you've taken them outside the doubles alley potentially, but, you know, at the 3-5 level, they might just be standing in the doubles alley or they might just be on the right edge of the singles court. That's fine. It's just about understanding what's likely to happen. So if that return keeps coming cross court, then the next question we ask is, If I know that ball's coming, what's the best shot that I can hit under that situation? And you might go out in court and actually play around with it a little bit and try a few different strategies and figure out what works for you, what starts the point the way that you want to, because maybe you want to take that next ball down the line and get into the net as quick as you can. Maybe you want to hit a looping heavy topspin ball back cross court and start a grinding baseline rally because that's the style of tennis you want to be playing. The point is, I take that serve and that, you know, the probable replies, and there might be two or three that depend on the player. So some of them might come cross court. If it comes cross court, what do I do then? If it goes down the line, what do I do then? And then we just build this library of plus ones, depending on the type of return that comes back. But you understand what's likely to come back based on the quality of your serve for the level that you're playing at.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, we definitely get to that very quickly. It really becomes, usually what I'll find is that somebody wants an outcome. Like, they want a certain type of return. Like, they've, you know, they want a floater in the middle of the court or, you know, something easy basically, right? But for most people, very quickly it becomes, well, hey, guess what? Like, your serve's not good enough that you're just going to get this floater every time.
Right.
So the follow-up question to that is, I actually go to what happens when you hit a bad serve? What, you know, how do people hurt you when you hit a bad serve? And we start preparing for that. One of the sort of psychological backdrops to the way that we work with this stuff is to try and really help them understand in a fundamental way what their strengths are, so they get more confidence really pressing those strengths and they enjoy it more, and it becomes like a positive feedback loop. And then at the same time, to address the things that cause fear in them and that can get to the emotional weaknesses, and that can sort of knock them off their game psychologically, if that makes sense. And we try and address those things.
Sure.
You wrote a really nice article a while back on Alex Daymanar, who's a young Australian tour player, a boy who's playing on the ATP, who's coming through. I think he's 19 years old now. And he does this thing that you break down in the article where it's almost like he baits you, right? Like he's like baiting a fish, and he's leaving this part of the court open, kind of begging you to hit it over there. I don't know that he really understands this, that is what he's doing. But the idea is, I like when players, sometimes their best tactic is just to get you to give them a forehand no matter where it is.
Mm.
Is to make that explicit for them and to show them doing some drills. Like, hey, you can handle everything on this side, right? So even if you have to hit a poor quality serve, but if they're going to give you the shot you want, go for it. Like, you can handle it. It's no big deal.
Right.
That doesn't work for everyone. But I think most of us tend to have a lot more confidence in certain parts of our game than other parts. And the basic theory is to really funnel play onto the parts of our game where we're really more solid and where we have more confidence.
Yeah, absolutely. So another way that we can attack this problem is, you might say, well, look, I know that I want to hit a forehand. I know that's absolutely my goal. Well, then go out there and hit a bunch of serves. And again, you pay attention to what comes back and just understand the types of serves that you hit that tend to get you forehands as the first ball. Right, this is one of the reasons why Roger Federer hit literally 50% or more of his first serves on the ad court. I mean, I'm sorry, on the deuce court out wide, is because he knows he's probably the vast majority of the time getting a forehand as that first ball. Whereas if he hits a different serve, he's going to get a different shot. And it's so important to him to hit forehands first. And you're going to have similar strengths and weaknesses. So understand that if you go body on the ad court, that's the serve that gets you the most forehands. And that doesn't mean you're going to hit body all the time. Because again, you've got to think back to the last couple of episodes about serving strategy and about using, you know, the situation and putting it all in context and understanding that, hey, like if I'm up 40 love, that might be the time that I want to serve to my opponent's strengths or serve to get that one, the weakness that I don't like so much. But, you know, maybe play that risk point in a risky way and take the chance of hurting my opponent in a way that I actually don't really want to play points, because that might help encourage them to not play to that weakness that I actually really don't want to be playing in the first place. So maybe I do hit a serve that I know is probably going to get me a backhand when I'm up 40 love, and I might take that backhand aggressively down the line and try and hit a winner on it, and maybe I miss it, but at least I've sent a message of, you know what, I can hurt you. I was close to hurting you with that play. And if I do manage to hurt you with it, then even better, because now I've given you something extra to worry about when hopefully you already had stuff that you were worrying about anyway.
All right, this is great. So I'm going to stop you right here because I think you've hit on something that really is worth making explicit. Too often, as analysts or as coaches or just as peers watching each other, we look at shots in tennis in isolation and we just say like, oh, well, that was a bad serve or that was a bad shot. Like, oh, man, like he hit a terrible backhand. He's up 40 love in the game. Luckily, you know, he's probably still going to win. When that's just oversimplifying the game, right? Like, there's many more levels to the strategy that you can employ to give yourself the best chance to win and to set yourself up to win more points in the future.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, one example that leaps to mind that I can remember from a match I played several years ago now, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I'm playing a doubles match, and the guy on the ag court had a huge forehand, a very, very big forehand, and he had a very, very steady backhand return. And so one of the things that I figured out that I could do was if I hit the kick serve into his backhand, I was getting a medium quality return back, which meant I was going to have to play a first volley most of the time. He wasn't missing it very often, but there was also predictability, like he wasn't really going to hurt me with it, but I also wasn't, you know, it wasn't a situation where I was just going to just pick on that and get a put-away volley every time. But the what I would do is I would serve there, and he wouldn't see a forehand from me for, you know, forever. But then when I needed a free point on the ad court, I would intentionally drop a serve short into the forehand, And it totally messed his rhythm up because he was on his toes, he's leaning a little bit backhand, all of a sudden he switches over to the forehand, and because of that switch, he's rushing a little bit. But then because the ball's short in the court, it's got a very different rhythm than a serve that lands deeper in the box. And so it was never an ace. I wasn't trying to hit an ace. But what I did was get him to miss, like off my second serve, I got him to miss basically every forehand return the entire match. Because the only time I would give it to him was as an off pace, when he hadn't seen it in a while, and you know the trajectory is different, the height's different, the timing's different, and he was early on it every single time and missed it every single time, and that was his strength. But it was just setting it up, and playing a bunch of points that were, you know, because we were going to win a bunch of points with serving to the ad side, serving out to his backhand. But if I'd gone to the forehand more often, he would have started to find the rhythm on it. And then it wouldn't have worked. But if I'd gone to the backhand all the time, then I was never going to get the 3 points. So it's just kind of constantly managing that and keeping track in my head of how many times, when was the last time I gave him that serve to look at? You know, is it still going to be okay? And there was always that element of risk, a little bit of like, oh God, I'm down break point. And I know I'm about to intentionally like hang a ball into this guy's biggest shot, hoping essentially that he's going to miss it. But also the belief that, look, I've used this sparingly enough that it's staying effective.
Right. I love that. There's a lot of dynamics that are in play there, but I just like the fact that you're saving that for moments where it fit into your bigger strategy, right? That there was really a plan there instead of just going like, oh, well, you know, this guy's bad at a, you know, at a short forehand thing, he rushes it, and so I'm just going to try and use it all the time.
Well, that was the thing, is that it's not necessarily that he was bad at it. If that had been the way that I was serving, if I'd hit the same serve onto the backhand, or if I dropped it short on the backhand as well, and he had the same rhythm with the footwork and everything else, he probably would have been crushing forehands from the very first point. Part of the big thing about it was I was dropping a serve 4 or 5 feet shorter in the box at a different speed and spin. And so, you know, he set his feet off of the way all the other serves had been, and he'd set his feet, and then he's leaning, and then the ball's still not there, and he's starting to fall forward that little bit, and he's off balance. And then when he's actually finally hitting the ball, he's off balance every time. Whereas on the back end, you know, when I was hitting it deeper in the box, he's actually on rhythm. I just knew that he wasn't going to actively hurt me on that shot. And so, you know, that's where we can just be looking for those little things. And that's not, it wasn't where I was hitting a second serve ace up the tee right on the line. You know, it was just about changing the speed and a little bit the kind of the nature of the spin, and changing the rhythm of that return for somebody and giving them something just every once in a while they hadn't seen, and voila, you get some errors. So bringing this back to this whole idea of serve plus one, so once you start to map out where those returns are going and you start to map out where that first shot is, I think it's just critical to understand that the way you serve and the way you hit the first ball of the point is going to dictate the terms in which that point is played. You know, the way you hit that first ball is going to change the way the entire point is played.
Definitely.
And so it's important that you have a very clear idea of what sort of point do you want to be playing, and how does my serve and my first ball fit into that picture.
So this is a little bit off topic, but for people that maybe struggled with figuring out their own identity of a player, is this maybe, could you maybe use this a little bit? Like, say I know, like, well, I know I have 3 serve plus one tactics that I really like, but I'm not really sure how I should be playing. Can I kind of work backwards from that and say, well, like, if these are my 3 main plays, like, this is how I should fill in my game around this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, the serve is the one shot in tennis that you have complete control over. I mean, certainly your opponent can go and stand wherever they want to, but they have no ability to directly impact, you know, where you're going to serve and how you're going to try to serve, right? It's the one thing that they cannot directly impact, because every other shot that you hit in tennis, your opponents hit the ball first. So you are, in essence, reacting to some degree to the quality of their shot, the quality of the location, the type of spin, all these other factors. Those are going to inevitably impact what you do. But the serve is the one thing that's completely under control. So, you know, if you have a particular one, you know, serve plus one play that you like, and then you should be developing your game around those plays, you know. And also understand that, look, if this is a serve plus one that's working for you and that plus one is working for you, then you should be looking for ways to create the same type of shot that is your plus one in other parts of your game. So, you know, Jake mentioned a kind of a mid-court forehand. For me, that's a big thing for me. It's if I get the ball, you know, the forehand in the middle of the court, I'm going to feel very good about winning that point. So then the question becomes, if I don't have kind of the rest of my game fleshed out yet, I can ask myself, what shots do I hit that tend to get back a forehand in the middle of the court? And then how can I start hitting more of those shots? And this kind of leads you down a little bit down this rabbit hole. Well, you know what, maybe I get that ball when I hit a high loopy backhand cross court. But I don't have the technique to necessarily hit a high loopy backhand cross court off a shin high ball. So if somebody gives me a shin high ball, how do I go from the shin high ball to a waist high ball that I can then hit high and loopy cross court, which then gets me back that mid-court forehand that then lets me win the point, you know? We can just kind of backtrack and dig deeper and deeper and deeper and track back more and more shots to identify where things are originally going wrong or the ways in which we can make one decision differently that three or four shots down the line leads to a completely different outcome.
That's a good point. I know that I use that backtracking all the time. I was just thinking that it's a little bit fascinating to me because I think some people listen to this and think like, yeah, well, everybody wants, you know, a mid-court forehand. But then I thought of myself in my own game. I actually don't want the ball in the middle of the court.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I want the ball out wide on one side or the other. And I don't really care which side it's on, but I need the ball to be kind of over out in the middle of the court to give me some angle to work with.
Right.
I mean, that's just the way my game is, and that's where I can hurt people. And so I very much work backwards just the way that you're saying from each situation to say, okay, well, this is what I've got. How do I get the thing that I want? And I mean, the last scenario that I'm going to give you is one that we've used for a couple of players on the tour. And we might have touched on this like a long time ago on a podcast, but we started using backhands down the line and slice backhands down the line in a very, very different way, where there were shots that we thought of as not being that great in the past. And then we realized, like, heck, that shot gives me the thing that I want, right?
Mm.
So the quality of the ball doesn't matter as much because I'm getting what I want. I'm hurting you on the next ball.
Right.
And you know, that's working backwards, like you said, right? And it's sort of withholding judgment until we see it in the larger context. And I mean, this is what I think, if you've listened to the last two episodes about serving, really starts to come together for me, is having a coherency to that overall strategy, making sure that the way you think about your serve is fitting with what you're trying to do with your identity as a player. And then, like we're talking about today, having specific serve plus one patterns and really trying very hard to get to those as much as possible.
Absolutely. So one of the, I think the key ideas that I want to leave people with today is the things that you think are working for you on the court may not be actually the best things for you to be doing. So, you know, if we think about serving, maybe when you try and hit that wide ace or the huge serve up the tee for an ace, you know, maybe you do hit aces 10% of the time. And 10% would probably be a fairly realistic number when you think about the fact that the very best servers in the world are only hitting aces maybe 20-25% of the time on a good day, right? I mean, if you're John Isner, you're not hitting aces 50% of the time. That's not a thing. That's not a thing for anybody on the professional tour, men's or women's. You know, the best servers are acing between 15-25% of the time. So when you think about that, when you're trying to hit that big serve up the tee, maybe you do hit an ace 10% of the time. But then when we backtrack and think about what's going to happen for the, you know, five shots that follow that, if you don't hit the ace, it might be that hitting a serve that has a little more spin on it is actually slower, where you get quote-unquote fewer free points, but you might actually win more points overall with that serve over the harder serve. And I don't know, that may not be true for you, but it also might be true for you. Again, a lot of it depends on how well this fits in the bigger picture of your game. But
well, that that's what you've got to figure out. I mean, that's kind of the whole point, right?
That's where the work is, right? Is sitting down and actually, you know, taping a match, tracking this stuff, taking some statistics, and just figuring out what are the plays that are actually working for you versus the ones that you just think are or that you like the idea of. Because, I mean, probably not a lot of people wouldn't mind being able to go out there and serve like Nick Kyrgios or John Isner. You know, I mean, heck, I wouldn't mind
it. I would love it.
But, you know, the reality is awesome. Just that the few times that you hit serves that feel like you're serving that way may be costing you a lot more than you think on the back end of when you don't hit the ace or you don't hit that unreturnable serve. The rest of the time, and when you look at overall your total number of points played, if you look at the success rate of actually making this a serve and then the times you actually win the serve or the point when you do make the serve and compare that to your alternatives, there just may be better plays out there that you haven't thought of or haven't tried yet. So, you know, you've got to keep experimenting. You've got to keep working on this. But you've got to be thinking about what is that first shot. You're building patterns, and your first pattern that you will always be able to hit on your own service games is your serve and the first ball after. That should be patterned out. You should have plans for that. You should have contingency plans for that. And if you haven't yet, then, hey, get to work.
Yeah. I love it. Get to work.
So on that note, if you have any questions about this podcast or any of the other ones, do reach out, send us an email. You can reach me at glenn@tacticaltennis.com.
And I'm jacob@tacticaltennis.com.
You can hit us up on Twitter at tacticaltennis, or you can reach me directly at Glenn S. Hill, Glenn with one N. And, you know, obviously you can follow us on Facebook. And, you know, please do, if you haven't already, go to your podcasting app of choice and rate the podcast and, you know, like us on Facebook, that kind of thing. Just help spread the word, because we're not spending money to advertise. We're spending all our energy, you know, making podcasts and articles for you. So that would be very helpful. And on that note, have a good week.
Do the work, guys. Do the work.